Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Last week on the premiere segment of the second annual Franchise Legal Series on Franchise Today, and I might add, co-produced by Joe Caruso and very well at that, my guest was Lane Fisher. Lane and I discussed financial performance representations and specifically some of his really great thoughts on non-traditional FPRs. The segment with Lane is available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Well, this is the second week in the seven-part Franchise Legal Series, and my guest today is Jonathan Redgrave. Jonathan and I will be discussing the reality of social media and e-discovery legal issues. And if Jonathan's guest performance is anything like his first appearance on Franchise Today, it will be extremely informative and very eye-opening. But before Jonathan joins us, let's take a quick look at what's going on in the franchise world. As part of IFA's ongoing campaign to boost credit access to franchise businesses and better educate lenders about the benefits of the franchise model, IFA leaders will address the National Association of Government Guaranteed Lenders SBA Technical Conference set for May 3rd to 5th in Atlanta. Franchise industry speakers will include IFA Second Vice Chairman Steve Romanello, IFA Credit Access Committee Chairman Bill Hall, multi-unit franchisee Aziz Hashim, and IFA Educational Foundation President John Reynolds. Read more about the conference and visit IFA's Credit Access Center at the IFA website at franchise.org for the latest in their ongoing campaign to get America lending again to franchising. Now, in other IFA news, IFA has partnered with Inc. magazine to help increase the number of franchise businesses on the Inc. 505,000 list. If your 2010 annual revenues were greater than your 2007 annual revenues, you qualify to be nominated for the Inc. 505,000 2011 Fastest Growing Privately Held Companies list. Now, IFA members receive a 20% discount off the application fee using promo code IFAINC when they apply. Now, visit Inc.com to see the benefits of being on this prestigious list or go directly to the application. Now, questions may be directed to Megan Burns, that's Inc.'s Director of Private Company Outreach, at 212-389-5505. Now, grow your business, manage your risk. That's the message from the IFA for attending the upcoming IFA Legal Symposium in Washington, D.C. on May 15th through the 17th at the JW Marriott. Now, pre-registration ends on May 4th, so don't delay. Visit the IFA website for more details. Now, today's guest, Jonathan Redgrave, serves as trusted advisor to many Fortune 500 clients, providing strategic and ground-level advice and counsel. He also represents numerous other clients involved in litigation and government investigation, has worked as an expert witness and with special masters. Now, Jonathan is internationally recognized for his work. He's co-authored and authored and edited numerous publications in the area of e-discovery and electronic discovery, privacy, and, of course, data security, and has spoken around the world on these issues. Notably, Jonathan has extensive experience in all areas of complex litigation in state and federal courts and focuses his practice on information law matters. He regularly addresses issues involved in the discovery of electronically stored information, as well as issues concerning record retention and privacy policies and practices for clients. He's been recognized for exceptional standing in the legal community in Chambers USA, America's leading lawyers for business for 2010 for e-discovery. Jonathan, welcome back to Franchise Today.
Very glad to be here again.
Well, Jonathan, you know, the last time you were on Franchise Today, we discussed your firm, Redgrave LLP, being focused on information law. And again, if you would, because a lot of people have yet to hear that that appearance. You know, would you please share with these listeners the definition of information loss so we kind of have a backdrop to where we are today?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. Information law, broadly speaking, is anywhere where the law impacts information in our digital world. And so areas you might think of are privacy, data protection. You might also think of how information is kept in the ordinary course of business, how you keep records, what do you have to keep, how long do you have to keep it. Then also when you get into the litigation or investigation situations, how do I preserve or keep what I need to keep, make it available for the lawyers, and if it's the government investigating or to the other side, how do I identify and produce documents that I'm required to do under the law? So all these different areas that might have different legal components, like an antitrust or a breach of contract or an employment claim, they all come down to information. The same thing with a lot of business transactions. It's about information. So the currency of the modern age is as much information as it is money. We help companies, we help individuals figure out how to best manage information in a legally compliant manner.
Well, that was really a mouthful, and it sounds like you've spoken about this a time or two for certain, but I appreciate that definition. I'm sure there's a lot of people within the franchise community shaking their head right now thinking, oh, my God, what have I gotten into? You know, especially as social media has really become on the forefront of, you know, franchise professionals' minds. I mean, recently attended the IFA convention in Las Vegas, and there was various sessions with respect to social media, and it was just absolutely amazing at the standing room crowd that was out in the hallways waiting to hear and listen to various discussions about social media. So everybody's clamoring for information. A lot of people are getting involved in it, some more proficiently than others, some just sticking their toe into the water, and so it's a really big changing world. And I guess the question I have to ask to start off this is, how has social media changed the landscape in franchising for, you know, franchisors, franchisees, and in essence how the franchise relation dynamic works in today's digital age?
Well, there's a lot to that question, and I think it's a great question to start with because it sets the framework for, you know, some of the downstream legal issues we might discuss later. But, you know, what is this impact of social media on the franchise world? And it's huge. I mean, when you think about franchising to start with, you think about the uniformity and consistency, the whole idea of the brand and being able to represent it consistently across all of its vestiges. Where is it going to be? What's the experience the consumer is going to have with it? And then for investors, why do I want to invest in this? What's the value of the mark? What's the value of what's being presented? And how can that person with the collaborative partnership with the franchisor, you know, make a good profit and be a good business person in their community? Well, social media is this amazing thing that allows us to really extend out who we are. Now, the who we are as a brand, as an existence, it's a tremendous tool to be able to communicate ideas and information rapidly and then to have the interactive nature back. Now, the great thing about this is so many people are now going to social media for their experience with brands, to also find job opportunities, to participate in conversations with respect to their experiences with companies and with brands. So when you talk about an online presence for a franchisor, a franchisee, you're talking about touching actual customers, you're talking about touching potential customers, you're talking about talking to your franchisees, you're talking about potential franchisees, you're talking about your employees, you're talking about the media, the general public, as well as, guess who else is looking at you? Regulators. So you've got this entire world out there that in the old days you would have had trade shows, right? You would have had franchise publications. You would have had those particular direct vehicles or the circulars you would have sent out to potential franchisees. Those particular direct access vehicles to go back and forth with communications have been blown apart by this new world in which our experience with ideas and information through the collaborative means of the internet and social media is just wonderful. And I say wonderful because so many people think, well, a lawyer's going to step in and say, stop the presses, stop the wheels, this is all a disaster. wrong. This is an incredibly important place to understand that you need to be, to understand how you need to exist in this space. Now, the legal rules that come along and the reasons we need to pay attention to that is make sure we play well in the sandbox. There are rules. It's not just a free-for-all. And people are looking, regulators, FTC, are looking to see how people are playing in the sandbox to make sure the rules are being followed. So it's a tremendous world of opportunity. I don't think that people should be scared of it. You should be appropriately informed, though, of how to be in this space and to watch out for some of the pitfalls. So I think it's a tremendous change. I think it's a tremendous opportunity. But just be smart when you get into social media.
And certainly one should not start into the realm of social media without having a defined strategy in place and being able to realize the potential pitfalls that could be in the road ahead. You know, broadly speaking, if it's possible to do this in broad terms, you know, what are some of the legal issues you see in this area?
Well, I'll begin this with saying sometimes for the lawyers, they might say, well, it sounds like a law exam question, you know, from law school. And for the non-lawyers, they're like, oh, no, this is going to be the parade of horribles. Well, what I'm going to do is going to highlight some of the issues that you should be aware of are potential, and I stress potential issues for you, depending on what you do in social media. So just understand that these are things that the lawyers, if you're consulting with a lawyer, should be thinking about in terms of what your online presence and strategy is. And I'll go back to what you said, absolutely. Just don't dabble in it. Don't just kind of float out there. Have a strategy. Have an approach. And then that allows you to get good legal counsel on whether you're running into any of these issues. And now those issues, let's think about them. You could have anything like trademark infringement, depending on what you're putting up there, especially if you're making comparisons with others in your particular field, in your industry. You could have product disparagement, both as to your own, if someone else is doing something out there, or certainly to competition. You can get defamation claims, depending on what's being said. You can have promotions or giveaways that run afoul of state laws if you're not careful. You could violate franchise disclosure laws. You could have a violation of any of the laws if you're in a food franchise with respect to nutritional claims. You could potentially have issues related to antitrust. You can certainly have, depending on testimonies or other things you might do with respect to pictures of individuals, you might have invasion of privacy issues arise. And certainly, and not too unexpected, employment law issues, discrimination, hostile work, those kind of claims could come up depending on what social media you're involved in and what it is that you're doing and placing out there in the world. And quite frankly also, who within your organization is authorized to make posts or to create content that is then pushed out through social media outlets. So that's kind of a quick laundry list of some of the potential issues. And again, for the listeners, look, this is not meant to scare you. It's just meant to highlight that there are real legal concerns out there. And certainly if you don't have a plan for how you're going to engage in social media, you're likely to just trip into these things. And if you have a plan, just make sure you're getting good legal counsel with respect to, you know, do we have any issues here? And then how would we respond to an incident so you're not playing blind?
Right, exactly. And I think there's a lot of practical thought that goes into it and a lot of common sense. And I think the important thing leading into it is, you know, make sure, like you said, don't just dabble in it, have a plan and move forward. And you brought up a good point with respect to employment law issues. And, you know, what are some of the areas of concern with respect to employment law when it comes into the realm of social media?
Well, these are kind of concerns that any employer, not necessarily someone in the franchise world, would glom onto. But these are things that everyone should just at least think about. Break it down: pre-employment, during employment, post-employment. In the pre-employment world, a lot of people say, "Hey, this is a great place to find about, you know, about someone. I'm gonna go search for them in social media." Well, yeah, a lot of people do put a lot of information about themselves out there now, but you've got to be careful with respect to what information you're going to look at for candidates and then how you're documenting what you're searching for, because there's certainly a lot of information that's in a protected class that you're not supposed to consider And you can get into a lot of hot water if you don't have good guidelines in place, or if, quite frankly, you did consider inappropriate information with respect to your hiring decisions. You can see how quickly that could be a large problem if you have a large number of employees or potential employees out there that could bring claims. Now, during employment, you have a whole host of issues with respect to who has access to your social media outlets and who might be putting information on social media, and then, you know, how you're going to police what people who are working for you might be saying about the brand and the experience in the restaurant, or if you're in the restaurant industry or if you're in a service industry, what they're saying about the service. We've all seen the press, unfortunate press incidents with respect to certain employees that were doing improper things with food preparation, or saying things with respect to the products and services of other organizations, and that gets out and damages the brand. And then what does that do with respect to the employee? What was the guideline? What was the rule? Then also during employment, whether people are using social media to vent against other employees and then create hostile work environments, et cetera. And then post-employment, people may not think about this as much, but the request that you on a service, let's say like LinkedIn or somewhere else, hey, can you write a recommendation? Can you kind of, you know, say some sort of endorsement for someone? And there are certainly employment law issues that arise with respect to what you say and what you shouldn't say, especially as it may relate to that particular individual, how they separated from the company. And these are issues that certainly an organization should think through with respect to what's our policy going to be, what are our managers going to be told they can and cannot do in a social media setting with respect to recommending or endorsing someone in that context. So these are, you know, the pre, during, and post-employment worlds, just some of the things that people should think about as far as potential impact with employment law issues.
Yeah, it does raise a lot of questions in my mind, like, you know, who owns and who is ultimately responsible for an individual's LinkedIn profile when the employee posts an opinion or markets under his individual profile, which, of course, is associated with a company.
Well, that's a great point to raise because people, you know, we love our country in the United States because of the First Amendment freedoms we have, freedom of speech, and our ability to voice our opinions on issues. Now, where it crosses the line is when someone's representing that they're speaking on behalf of someone else, whether they have actual or apparent authority to do so. And, well, what are some of the markers you might look at? Well, do they have the registered brand trademark they're using on their site? Are they able to express things, and they're talking about who they're speaking on behalf of? Now, of course, the opposite side of this world is not too surprising either. It's the fact that if you have people that are working for you, they're making these brand testimonials but not revealing that they're actually, you know, employed by the company or working with the company, that can, it can be a problem as well. So what are the ground rules that you set in terms of if you're speaking on behalf of identifying yourself, or if you're going to say something about a specific product or promotion or issue that's related to the organization? What authority do they have? And if they are speaking with some sort of authority, or at least in a position of knowledge, are they identifying themselves appropriately? And then secondly, drawing lines about what conduct is not an appropriate conduct. I mean, in the old days, you wouldn't have allowed anyone in the company to go ahead and scribe a press release and send it to the New York Times or distribute it to the Associated Press. You need to be mindful of the fact that in this world of social media, some of those things people might post can have incredibly widespread viewership, especially if they do something clever on a YouTube kind of posting. And it's something that it can't be taken lightly. You need to understand that there are proper places to have rules with respect to appropriate conduct for people that are online, and that if they are going to express personal opinions, they make sure that those are clearly not associated with the brand and not associated with their employment or relationship with the entity. And there are ways in which to do that. People have a whole host of opportunities to express their free speech rights without necessarily bringing in their employers or the brands that they might be associated with. So it's just something that people should be thinking about in terms of setting the ground rules. And I got to tell you, for the most part, where we've seen it done, the employees get it. Everyone understands what the rules are. In fact, people like to have rules. It's almost like going back to grade school and you take a look at some of the studies of the open classroom concepts and, you know, how do kids do if you don't really give them rules? Well, you might not be surprised that there's chaos. Well, you know, it's not that we really go that much and grow up all that much when we go through school and get out into the workforce. People do like rules, not to the sense they want to be just overburdened, but I like to know what the ground rules are, and this is no exception, the area of social media. So if you set forth, we like you to be representing our brand in certain circumstances, so we love you to wear the uniform, we want everyone to have a positive experience with our brand. So if you go on social media, here's the rules of the road. If you're going to say anything about us, please do it this way, refer people to that site. And then otherwise, please don't have any relationship with us. If you're just going to, you know, state your free speech rights to anything else, please go ahead and do that on your own time.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up and you made a point to say, you know, not having the brand, the logo on their page. And I think about all the times where I see somebody don't have a personal picture in their profile, but have a picture of the brand logo on there. And, you know, when you mention that, I mean, I would take it then that, you know, somebody can be perceived as acting on behalf of the brand, because that's what people see when they see the message, even though it might be an individual behind it.
And that's exactly right. One of the great challenges, of course, for organizations is now if people are promoting or putting your brand name up with a different message, how are you going to enforce that? Are you going to walk around to every single page on Facebook? Are you going to walk around to every single page, you know, on MySpace or on LinkedIn to kind of identify people who aren't appropriately using it? Well, you know, there's a certain police factor here. You can't, you know, be on every street corner to catch every crime. But there really is, just as there always has been, you know, a need to be vigilant about your brand, about your trademarks, you know, about your trade dress. And so, you know, having simple rules with respect to employees to keep company logos, trademarks off of personal social media, unless there's a business purpose and you kind of authorize people to speak on behalf or do something. Not mentioning the company in posts unless there's a particular business purpose. Not posting or blogging during business hours unless that's part of their job. And then making sure, of course, on the employment side that work-related complaints are being driven through company channels and it's not being just thrown out on the Internet through any social media blogging or posting so those tiffs and issues get placed in an inappropriate form for resolution. So, I mean, there's certain rules, again, that a franchisor or franchisee, whoever is kind of working with the employees in this space, can set out so that social media is used appropriately and not misused. And then to the extent there is misuse, just like you have restrictions now that if you you know, disclose confidential trade secret or proprietary information, that can be a ground for dismissal. Well, misuse of social media that impacts the brand could similarly be grounds for dismissal or other discipline under the employment agreement and contract.
Sure. You know, there's a lot of people that like to get cute with social media, and you know, on LinkedIn, they require your LinkedIn profile to be a personal profile, and then some people will get past the rules and name their page like XYZ as the first name, space franchise as the second name, and I know LinkedIn has tried to pull them down, but like you said, you can't have a policeman on every corner, and I know Facebook has run into the same issues. And you talk about, you know, employees and they're involved in all the social media activity, and the question comes up is what happens when an employee leaves a company, litigation occurs, discovery ensues, and then LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter information from the employee is collected, you know, pre- and post-employment. I mean, what are the ramifications here?
Well, I think people need to understand that the reality of social media being a place where people put information puts it squarely in play with respect to state and federal rules that govern discovery in civil matters. That is, this information could be potentially relevant evidence in a lawsuit. The reality is that if you didn't have any idea what your employees were doing and what they were saying out there, that puts you at jeopardy of just being surprised by what they actually have been doing, and they may have created, unwitting to you, liabilities and issues that are out there. So having, you know, certainly having a policy and then you can show they violated the policy is you know, one thing. If you had no policy and you're out there, it's going to be one question about, well, what did you really do to prevent the dissemination of this information out in that forum? Now, in terms of what you're actually going to find, you're going to find if you try and go to the third-party provider of services, they're probably going to refuse unless you get the consent of the person who actually posted the information. There are mechanisms by which, certainly on Facebook has created one now, where a person who has placed information there can actually download most of their content using one of the tools, and therefore you should be able to get the discovery through the lawsuit against the party itself. But the reality is now that there's information on social media sites, whether it's a company-to-company or an individual-versus-company kind of lawsuit, people need to be thinking about, well, is there information that I might need for the litigation on a social media site? Are there facts or evidence that might only exist on the social media site that I need to know about to understand what the claims are, and how would I defend them or prosecute them? So it's certainly an area that's been opened up, and you just can't put your head in the sand. You've got to understand that you're going to have to deal with this in the litigation context.
Sure. Well, as we started off, you know, we talked about a social media plan, having a plan in place, and then obviously having some strong guidelines, policies, and procedures in place, top-down effect. And now, of course, the question arises in my mind about issues that arise when people are employed at the franchise location. You know, and there's a lot of franchisors that listen to our show, especially as the Franchise Legal Series has gotten so popular. And they might be asking the question, you know, how do I not exercise too much control over a franchisee's employee? Where does that fit into the equation?
Well, that's a very good thing. It's been a traditional kind of quandary for those who own the brand and marks in the franchisor world to impose enough uniformity on the franchisees such that the brand continues with the value. You're able to exercise enough control so there's uniformity of performance, uniformity of product, but then you've maintained a level of independence such as you haven't picked up on what is known as vicarious liability for any of the torts or other mistakes that a franchisee might make in their contracts or in their relations with employees or third persons. And the whole world of social media here, I think, begets, you know, a reexamination of what are you doing in this space. So when you're allowing franchisees, and I say allowing in a certain way, to go onto social media space, because you could say our brand's never going to be there, and I really don't see many people actually saying that. So what can you do to give guidelines, rules of the road, just like you might do with employees, to franchisees? Different brands will handle this differently. Some might say we're going to create shells or portals so that the local franchisees have this as a standard mock-up as far as what we want them to do for the local franchise in terms of how they're going to appear on different social media outlets. And then within that, as far as publishing content, basically they're told that they're not supposed to do anything that's illegal, but they're responsible for the content. And then, like other promotions and other materials, you make available information that they may choose to use. You make available links back to the franchisor website or other content spaces, so there's uniformity of message. But because you've given a level of independence as far as how they actually construct the message and they can have local information on it, you've kind of still insulated yourself from having total control over that site. Likewise, by having the clear independence of the franchisee with respect to the posting of content, you've hopefully insulated the franchisor with respect to vicarious liability if there's defamation, slanderous statements, other things that might appear on a site that could get the person who's posting the information into trouble. Now, what's the reality? Are you going to police all your franchisees' websites? You might choose to do that. Just as you walk around, you make site inspections. You will go and see if the franchisee is performing, if they're keeping the store clean, if they're keeping the store consistent with respect to menu items, with respect to how they're promoting events or promoting product in that region. So there's a lot of similar type of activities with respect to monitoring that you would do on site, on location, that you can do on the virtual site, the virtual world of social media. But keep in mind with respect to what you're actually enforcing for, and are you actually consistent with the franchise agreement? Are you consistent with whatever guidelines you put out there for social media in terms of enforcing the brand, protection of the brand, as opposed to actually exercising control? When you get to the point of exercising control, telling them the here's and the what's is exactly what they can post, what they can do, not just saying, well, you can only use our brand and our image in this way, but actually saying how it's supposed to appear or what content is supposed to run on what days, you're getting closer and closer to basically exercising complete control over it, so you're going to be held to liability. Now, from a business perspective, some people might say, because social media is such a powerful vehicle today, and you can communicate so broadly, so fast, that you want to control the message, you might say, I'd rather pick up the risk of having control over this particular outlet and the liability comes with it, because I can better manage it and have every single franchisee doing their own thing out there. Whereas other brands might say, you know what, I'm going to trust my franchisees. I'm not going to try and patrol all of them. I've given them the rules of the road. And when we have a problem pop up or someone brings it to our attention, we'll deal with it, but we're not going to try and police everything, and we're okay with that. So there's a lot of business risk analysis that will go on here with respect to the particular franchise, the brand, and how much they want to control the message in terms of how much control they're going to exercise over the medium, realizing that the more control you have, the more likely it is you're going to pick up the vicarious liability for acts and statements in that forum.
You know, and I think it's like anything else, comes down to some good common sense and practical sense and understanding the interdependency of a franchise relationship. Yesterday I did a one-hour webinar on franchise social media, very specific to obviously to franchising. And of course, the questions that always arise out of there is, you know, should the franchisor, you know, have control? And there's some people within the social media world that say, yeah, franchisors should be the ones controlling. And then, of course, there are others. There's a lot of brand journalists out there that say, oh, no. It needs to be the franchisee. They know their local level better than anybody else, and they should control the franchise, the social media footprint. And of course, I'm in the middle. Maybe it's not the middle. Maybe it's really the practical top-down effect. Is I think it needs to be a collaborative effect, an effort of both working together so that everybody sees what's going on, and everybody's helping everybody within the realm of putting out messages and posting content, and also in being able to react if there is a crisis situation or if something pops up that needs an urgent response to it. To me, the more eyes that are looking at it from within the brand, within the organization, the better. And then to take it even one step further, one of the benefits that we found that we've been working with franchise clients within social media is, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I want to sell more franchises through social media. I want to drive more traffic to the unit level through social media. But a big part that they've missed or maybe ignored or maybe just weren't aware of that we found is that with a collaborative effort, there is an improvement in communications throughout the entire organization because of, God, and I know my co-producer Joe Caruso hates this word, a transparency. It's visible. It's out there for everybody to see and everybody in the organization to be involved with. So I really think that joint effort is really the right way to go, and I think by doing so, it actually diminishes some of the control issues. Would you agree there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I would. And I got to tell you, people need to understand that the collaborative approach with folks who may be at the store level is truly important because just like all politics is local, at the end of the day, unless you're a truly internet business a la Amazon that's just shipping stuff to people, guess what? You've got a location, you've got people, and you've got relationships. Pretty much, you know, products are important, but people come back to a brand, they come back to a franchise because of the relationship, that they enjoy the experience, that whatever they're buying, whether it's a service or a product, it made a difference to them. And a lot of that is the interaction. And you know this from all the studies you've done. If you've been in this area for a while, you take a look at those successful franchises where the interaction with the people at the counter, the staff, in the store, wherever it is, if they have a positive relationship, they think they've been helped, that, you know, increases your sales. It really is. So the training and the importance of having, you know, professional, courteous, the simple mom kind of rules is incredibly important. Well, what does that mean for social media? Well, guess what? Just like that personal store interaction, the interaction on social media is a personal one, that it personalizes brands. It personalizes the people, kind of like some of the brands where you've had people that have become very popular for their blogs. Popular because they're providing information, popular because they might be witty, but it's something that provides value and people enjoy. They get something out of it. So with respect to the social media space, who's going to know the customers in your particular region? Who's going to know the people that want to come to this brand, this mark, this value in that store? Well, it's the people at that level. So you can't think that someone in the headquarters is going to understand every single region, every other a store. That one person can dynamically create and manage a message as a singular item. Having more people involved, really, through this collaboration, as you know, can be a very powerful way for people to pick up on those trends, to pick up on the messages that are really resonating that maybe you didn't think of. And quite frankly, what people who've really, I think, delved into the space of social media have found out that they're able to get so much more brand research without paying the money and really going through the same effort that the traditional routes have been. Not to say you don't need that, you do, but it's just another tool now that if used, you know, well, it can really help enhance your ability to reach those people who are buying your products and services at the end of the day. And what's really kind of nice about the segue here is that it really is about that collaboration. And by having a collaborative approach, what that means is no one's going to go rogue on you. They're not going to feel like they have to go out and create their own site or their own blog to kind of post if they're angry or they're upset or they want to get their own message out because they don't think the right message is being said. By having a collaborative approach, it allows that to be pulled in, and it's better able to manage the message, so to speak. So I really encourage kind of what we've laid out there as a constructive and effective strategy.
Yeah, definitely so. And, I mean, it could raise, I know just in listening to you speak and just my mind racing ahead, especially coming out of the webinar yesterday, I just think of the list of questions that I could ask, but we'll move forward on this. You know, we talked about, you know, the different benefits that franchise organizations can gain through social media. And, you know, we talked about policies and procedures. And one question that has, you know, what are some examples of elements that are essential to social media policy over franchisee use?
Well, you know, in terms of a best practices approach, what you want to do is clearly, as we've been saying here now for a half hour and more, recognizing it's an important and valuable brand asset, that social media is a critical component, and that you want a coherent and effective system-wide strategy, okay? So what are you going to do? You're going to provide franchisees with social media strategies and content along the lines of what we've been talking about. This is really similar to the internal guidance that might be provided to employees. And then you give them the list of clear do's and don'ts. Those are very important with respect to providing the rules of the road. And, you know, this goes back to the do's and the don'ts along the lines of, you know, prohibiting the posting of false information about the company, employees, customers, affiliates, and competitors, making sure that you're very clear about those rules. Having the identification of someone within the organization that can be contacted with questions about the use of social media so that the franchisees or others who are working in the space, they have a point of contact and they're not just floating out there. Instructing and really educating people that might be in the role of creating content and being out there, whether on the franchise or the franchisee level, that they are given the tools to exercise good judgment and that there is an expectation there. There is personal and professional responsibility for content that's posted. That people really understand it's not just a flippant kind of activity. This really is a critical element of the brand identification. And if they're there on behalf of the franchisee, if they're representing the mark of the franchisor, that is something they have to take personally and professionally as a critical aspect of their employment, as their role as a franchisee, and they'll be held accountable. I mean, people do step up to the plate when you put that on them. You know, requesting that folks out there that have blogs, that their identification is clear, you know, to a point of transparency, as well as with disclaimers about what they are and are not talking about on behalf of the brand or on behalf of the franchisee or the franchisor. I think giving ground rules with respect to the proper topics for discussion that can add business value, so it's kind of clear what you're expecting. You don't just say, hey, this social media stuff's pretty cool, go do it. Well, consistent with that whole concept of having an effective wide, system-wide strategy for communications and social media, identify the topics where you think there's business value added by having people engaging in that dialogue in their area. You know, I think that you know, people have to be cognizant that the social media interactions have to be done in compliance with the codes of conduct, harassment, confidentiality policies that any given employer has, that the franchisee and the franchisor on different levels will have those kind of policies. People need to understand that social media is not an out. It's not a free reign to do whatever you want. It's not Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park. There are rules, and you're held accountable to those as well.
Sure.
You know, I think for do's and don'ts, those are kind of, you know, a few of the things that I would highlight that people should be incorporating into kind of their best policies and practices.
You know, and certainly one can't think of franchising and law/legal in the same sentence without thinking about the franchise sale and those type of relationship issues. And of course, what I'm referring to are unintentional or intentional earnings claims, you know, whether it be, you know, tweeting an article with sales revenue information or what have you. And I've seen that, you know, time and time again within the social media platforms, and it's hard to discern whether it's intentional or not. But where I do think it's intentional, and I'd like your opinion on this, it seems like, you know, we've made the transition from people that do these advertorials to now article marketing, and some are calling themselves brand journalists. And a lot of them are of the opinion, well, I could write an article over here for your company, and there'll be earnings claims built in there. And then you, as the franchise sales representative, you know, don't have to say anything, but just point. In other words, you know, put the link over here, and that'll accomplish what you're looking to accomplish. And I've seen that time and time again. And I've seen people on LinkedIn promoting themselves as social media experts saying that exact same thing. And it's clearly just a way they think they can get around an earnings claim. What's your opinion on that?
Well, there's a couple of things here. People that have been in the franchise world for a while understand that there are particular rules both on the state and the federal level with respect to what disclosures you can make, what representations you can make, and the format in which you're supposed to make those representations. There are a lot of people that are in the social media space that don't have that experience, don't have that judgment, and certainly have never really been exposed to that world, as to which then they are out there to try and apply their trade, and a lot of people, hey, I can do social media, and then they go after anyone and everyone saying, hey, I can help improve your sales, I can really help improve you. And, you know, a lot of people come up with a franchise idea, and they want to, you know, get people across the country maybe interested in becoming a franchisee. And maybe they're approached by one of these people that says, hey, it's social media, this is the way to do it, and, you know, we'll help you, we'll get out there. And, you know, the worst-case scenario, they have no clue with respect to any of the disclosure requirements, and they just kind of put things straight out there. Maybe even worse, though, is the person that says, oh, look, we understand, you know, you've got the disclosure requirements on your FTC. You know what? Tell you what, we've got a way around that. You know, it's almost like that critical rule of buying real estate or buying anything. If it sounds too good to be true,
it is.
And so what does that mean here is don't take lightly the requirements under both state and federal law with respect to your disclosure requirements and what you can and cannot say with respect to financial performance. And this is not a place to cut corners, okay? The bottom line is your brand valuable? Is your idea as a concept something that's really worth, you know, both promoting, but also protecting. And if you got an idea that's worth its salt, then it is. Don't cut corners on this, okay? Stick to what you're supposed to do with respect to how you make the offers, how you make the disclosures with respect to financial performance, and use social media for its space to discuss maybe the products and the brands, and channel people to the proper place and the proper representations that are made with respect to how the franchise is performing, what the what a franchisee could expect. And make sure, because those layers of information are properly vetted by the lawyers and others in the business to make sure the right statements are being made, don't try and cross the wires and cut corners here. This is a significant issue, I think, for liability down the road. It's one thing if the economy is going great and we're kind of in an upswing now, but when things go south and things go haywire, or our franchise kind of, expands and then it crashes, the liability issues here are latent. Because then people will go back and say, what was said? When was it said? They'll point to things in these social media statements if people are being cute, if people are trying to link to things to try and get around it. These are things that will come back and bite you. And why do you want to lay those landmines for yourself when you're trying to build a constructive and profitable franchise? You don't want to create latent liabilities like that. So this is one area I think people should be very concerned about. You should be especially concerned if someone's coming to you really promoting, saying, hey, we can really help you get more people interested in buying a franchise location and doing this. We can just put it all out there in social media. Listen to legal advice. Don't cut corners, okay, because this is an area I know the feds and states maybe haven't had the same enforcement capabilities, enforcement powers, not enough people, like the every policeman on the corner kind of syndrome. But the reality is they are interested. I believe there's going to be more enforcement. I think there are people that are looking from the regulatory side here, and you shouldn't assume that you've got carte blanche to do whatever you want because it's quote-unquote social media and anything goes. That's not true.
Right, absolutely the case, and it should definitely not be taken lightly, and it's not something that you should just take a secretary who seems to be on Facebook all the time and put them in charge of your social media program. And the last question that I have with respect to, franchise sales and social media, as we all know, there are many franchisors that use third-party brokers. And a lot of those third-party brokers are engaged in social media activity, especially with respect to that franchisor's offering. How does a franchisor, or how should a franchisor, monitor and manage that activity? And to what extent do they have an obligation to do so?
Well, I think the reality is here, just like any other business transaction, we're going to have another entity assisting you with that. It's critically important you understand what it is that they're actually doing. What are they authorized to do in this particular space? Do you understand how they're going to use social media with respect to the promotion and placement and anything else they're going to do on your behalf? You cannot go into this blindly. Just like any other agency relationship, there's a potential that you're going to be held liable as the principal for the acts of your agent. So you cannot turn a blind eye to this and just kind of wish and hope for the best when there's a broker relationship out there. You need to ask questions, just like you would in any other business situation. Understand what it is they're going to do. Don't just say, oh, well, top-line promise, you're going to be able to get me these results. You need to understand in this space, just like you would have in the old days, as far as if they're going to do print advertisements, if they're going to do direct solicitations, whatever communication they were going to do, when you have someone out there acting on your behalf, you should know what they're doing for you. It's kind of like even with the employment situation. If you have someone down at the corner, hawking your product or saying something about it, making representations or warranties or statements, boy, it's your product, it's your profit. Wouldn't you want to know what they're doing? So from a common sense standpoint, when you're talking about today's age and you've got social media as a potential vehicle, or in reality an actual vehicle people are going to use, have a discussion. Understand what they're going to do for you there. And this might actually be a way in which you're going to distinguish between which brokers you might actually want to do business with. If someone says, oh, we just deal that, we'll just take care of that. Well, what does that really mean? Did that really provide you an assurance that they're doing the right thing? The same token, someone said, we don't really do anything with that. Well, why not? I mean, this is a space where a lot of people are. there are appropriate ways to communicate. So what are you going to do? So it's really coming down to having an understanding and not just leaving it to chance or whimsy or just dumb luck as far as what's going to happen in space. Ask questions. Understand what's going on there, because there's not an insubstantial, or I should say there's a non-insubstantial chance that you could get zinged if they, acting on your behalf, do something inappropriate.
And certainly when it comes to a lot of the young marketers that are out there that understand a lot of the rules of engagement within social media and really understand the technological side of it, the technical side of social media, if they don't understand and have a full understanding of franchising and these disclosure laws and everything else that goes with it, certainly would not give them carte blanche to just put a social media program in place for a franchise organization. You know, and you mentioned, you know, latent liability, and you talked about landmines, which I think is great. You know, don't leave these landmines laying out there for you to trip back over. And certainly then the question comes up about legal discovery and records management. I mean, is social media basically in play when it comes to litigation?
Yeah, social media is clearly an area that could be very much in play depending on what the litigation is. I mean, you kind of in your question before, when you lay the groundwork for, you know, why would someone be upset with this business relationship when it's gone south? Well, guess what? Because you promised certain returns. Well, we never made those returns. Take a look at our, you know, our offering, our statement, our submission. It doesn't say anything about this. Well, wait a second. Take a look at this, where you're linked to this, and you kind of made the assumption and you made the implicit promise that our returns would be 15% year over year, and we didn't come close to that. And in fact, you know, we're down on our investment, and quite frankly, we think you misled us. And oh, by the way, there's another, you know, umpteen number of us out there across the country want class action status. And now I want you to go out and dig up for me every single representation that you made, every single post that you made across the country in the last 5 years when you were soliciting people to become your franchisees. Oh, and by the way, if you're not able to actually produce that for us, tell you what, we're going to assume that you actually destroyed it, or we're going to ask a court to assume that you destroyed it. And, you know, with that, we'll just have a jury then assume that whatever wasn't produced because you didn't keep it, even though you should have kept it, just like you keep your formal disclosure statements. Well, we'll just have a jury, you know, use their imagination to determine what you actually said that you actually had destroyed or at least didn't care to keep. So you can see how this snowballs into an effect, as I just tell that tale of woe, of, wow, do we need to keep what we're saying? If we don't keep what we're saying, what's going to be used against us? And, wow, even if we did keep it, why is the impact in a litigation situation? Well, it can be very dramatic depending on what was said, which gets us full circle to having that kind of, you know, strategy, having rules of the road, and being particularly concerned about statements that are made in the traditional context of disclosure requirements, because that's where the big money in the large way comes back to bite you, right? When you have people that believe you've made statements as to the financial performance of an entity, of a brand, of a franchise idea, and it goes south, that's where not only can you have one franchisee or potential franchisee come back against you, you could have multiple cogged together that could really, you know, take down an entire enterprise based upon, you know, what maybe your broker or someone else was saying in social media and you didn't know about it if you don't have that planned, if you didn't ask the questions, which gets back again to just being a smart, smart person when it comes to your brand, your mark, your presence in social media. Don't be scared by these stories. Don't be scared by these list of horribles here. We, you know, in some ways, I think this whole discussion here, we've told you about the fact that if you run your car off the road, you can get hurt. Well, duh, you need to know where the road is. You need to know how to drive your car. But we drive cars every day, okay, and most of us are safe. I drove the car yesterday. I'm here today. You know, accidents can happen. But for the most part, if you know how to drive, you know how to adjust for the conditions, you know where the lines are on the road, and you know how to take curves that's slower, you do fine. If you don't have any understanding of that, you go flying off the road and you get hurt. So in this space here, if you use common sense, you create the rules of the road, you have people playing with that blueprint for where you want your brand to be and how you want its social media presence, especially as it relates to kind of creating new business relationships and transactions, you're going to be, you know, in good shape. You know, if there's an accident, we're going to figure out what went wrong there. But for the most part, you're going to be able to go back and forth and use the roads. And the best thing about this is social media gives you a great opportunity to reach so many more parts of the world. You know, the world of your customers, the people who want to experience your brand, and you can really enhance that brand experience. And then even throughout the system, you know, create good experiences for the franchisees, for the employees, for the other people out there that interact with the brand that help, you know, move up your profits.
Yes, yeah, certainly we live in an exciting time with social media's multi-platform and multimedia opportunities, and the risks definitely do not outweigh the benefits. The benefits are far greater than the risks, and I think the a lot of what you're saying is practical. You know, don't try to get around a system. You know, one question that comes to mind that people often ask me, and specifically within franchising, because that's where I work exclusively, is, okay, you know, if I'm asked to produce all my social media activity and I produce it, and the other side comes back and says, we don't think this is all that you had, and going away from what you said as far as then we can assume that you destroyed it. Is there a way, or maybe a better question is, you know, tell our audience how social media content and messages and posts can be found? I mean, can they be found online after the fact?
Well, you know, this is a great unknown in many ways. We do know that tweets, for example, are actually being kept practically in perpetuity, at least at this point. The Library of Congress is even getting all the copies of tweets. So if you're just in 140 characters or less that you're messaging, well, we might actually be able to find that. But with respect to other places where you might post information, it's a little bit unclear about how long information will reside in those forums. I mean, we all think about Facebook, for example, as being ubiquitous. It's now here. Well, you know, I could go back in my computer days and talk about how I used a Decimate for word processing, or use any number of technologies that simply don't exist today. You know, you take a look at the ascendancy of MySpace, and actually it's descendancy. You know, just because we have social media spaces today doesn't mean they're necessarily all going to exist in the same way in 5 or 10 years down the road. So I don't think we should have this assurance that things are just going to exist forever because. So there's a lot of
right.
challenge in terms of understanding how long information will be out there. And I think the important thing is if you have a plan and a strategy in place and you know where postings were made, you've got a great likelihood that you've been able to capture at least the content, if not the look and feel of every page. You've captured or have some means of capturing content so you can come in and say, well, we might not have every post, we might not have every piece, but this is what our message was. We had a consistent strategy. This is the person who managed our brand presence on social media. They'll testify about the things we said and what we didn't say and what the party on the other side is saying we said. There's no proof of that. You can't assume that because we have a record of how our presence on social media was managed. And it gets back to having a plan. So even if you don't have a perfect system to capture information, it might be very hard to find it out in space in the internet by itself. If you've got a regular routine business practice and you've got people that are in charge of it, then you're going to have a line of defense. And again, this goes back to having a system-wide approach to it. So even if we don't have a perfect system to capture things, and quite frankly, people can't even capture us on the internet now. People say they do. They can't. The reality is, you know what? Of course, we're looking for reasonable and defensible approaches. And if you've got a plan and a process in place, you can deal with the gaps. You can address those, and courts will say, okay, I understand it. We're not going to presume anything here. You know, you can put on your evidence and let's see where a jury takes that. And that gets you out of any allegations of spoliation. But if you're just helter-skelter, if you just have no plan or process and people are able to pull out dribs and drabs and make it look like you're making misrepresentations at the financial performance, or you're saying things about product quality and other things that weren't true, or you're disparaging someone else's products, and then it turns out there's a missing link in the chain and you've got no ability to know what you said, you've got no one that was responsible, that's when you get into big trouble.
Sure. Well, Jonathan, we're approaching the top of the hour, and I know you and I could probably talk about this for the next 5 or 6 hours. The information you shared today was definitely eye-opening, quite informative, a lot of practical sense behind a lot of it. And I really thank you for being my guest on Franchise Today and look forward to having you on a future show as well.
Always happy to be here and really enjoy the entire series. So I hope folks are able to kind of listen in to the entire series and really think about these issues.
I appreciate it. Today's show will be available later today on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Thanks again to my co-producer, Joe Caruso, for helping to make the second annual Franchise Legal Series on Franchise Today a leading media event in franchising. And by virtue of listenership for last week's show with Lane Fisher and for what I've seen today, I believe this year's series will be very popular. Joe, your efforts are greatly appreciated. Next week, I welcome Lee Plave to the third segment in this year's Franchise Legal Series. As, again, we discuss social media within franchising, I'm certain should be a great follow-up to today's show. So until next week, I'm Paul Segretto, wishing you the best of luck in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.